The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Amazingly intelligent physician, anesthesiologist, from what I recall. And she is with the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And talking about what looks to be a continuing spike in overall deaths post-vaccination. And wanted to see what the data is indicating. We'll have a little talk about that. After 7 o'clock, we have Rep. Dwayne Junker, who will be checking in. I don't know if they're still down at the border right now. No, yesterday, a number of House Republicans in the state legislature, maybe some senators too, were all hanging out at the border trying to do a little. Well, you know, we're all border states now. And I'm kind of curious what this is all about. Josephine County Commissioner Herman Berchick is also going to be talking about inflation, what it really means. And speaking of which, it looks like, according to the Wall Street Journal, the Federal Reserve is going to be signaling that interest rates will be higher for longer. And markets usually have not been real happy about things like that. They were expecting, first they were looking for 4 interest rate cuts in 2024. Now, okay, we're down to 3. Now it's 2. Now some are even wondering if there's going to be any interest rate cut at all. And I would figure that if there's going to be an interest rate cut, let me put it this way. The Federal Reserve, the central bank, always likes to tell you that, well, it's independent of politics, except they're appointed by politicians, you know, the Fed chair and everything else. So politicians have something to do with where the interest rates go. One thing we have to take in consideration, though, is that the Federal Reserve doesn't want to look like a whore for Joe Biden and cut interest rates right now and inject a lot of financial heroin into the nation situation. You know, they want to be a little hoary, but not, you know, the whole ball of wax. You know, I don't know if there's a degree of hoariness or not. But anyway, so they're probably going to hold back for the time being. And will it be like right before the election? Will it be like after the election's over? You know, you can probably take some bets on that, okay? All right. The top local headline here really is that we had a 68-year-old pervert from Grants Pass who is going to be sentenced to life in prison. So that was a good result. This is the guy who was found guilty sexually abusing a little girl in the Grants Pass YMCA pool, 68-year-old Rex McCurdy. And Judge Brandon Thusen ended up finding him guilty. He was found guilty, rather, of a jury, 2 counts of sex abuse. And so the judge sentenced him to life in prison. So there we go. McCurdy's lawyer had asked for 75 months. KOBI 5 reporting, though, that this is the proper sentence, though, for the crime committed, life in prison. You think about this, he ended up getting into this because his sex offender status was hidden or somehow inaccessible during COVID time. You know, all of the ways that mostly the Democrats in the administrative state found a way to shield the pervs and the criminals from any kind of accountability for the wrongdoing, but they wanted to screw with everybody else. Interesting how that ended up working. I hope I'm wrong about this, but I'm wondering if the next thing is going to be, is the next Rex McCurdy going to be getting into the locker rooms and the little girl and messing with the little girls and things like that just by claiming to be a little girl himself? I don't like thinking that's where we're going, but this seems to be the push right now, the lies that we are all supposed to believe under the whole aspect of, well, gender affirming. We must affirm the gender of the mentally ill. So anyway, that's the latest out of that. He's going to prison for a long, long time. So I don't think many people are going to be shedding too many tears on that. A pair of Oregonians who filed a lawsuit could force the state to pay up, could be millions of dollars to Oregonians because of that big data breach last year. More than 3.5 million Oregon residents' driver's licenses and ID card information was stolen. And the plaintiffs involved in this, according to the Oregonian, Carrie Evangelist and Brian Ells, they're looking for class action status for all the affected state residents. Their information, names, addresses, DOB, last 4 digits of the Social Security numbers, heights and weights, they were hacked in May of last year by a Russian cyber gang. Also hacked an estimated 2,700 public and private organizations from New York City schools to British Airways and the BBC. They're figuring 90 million victims worldwide. But don't worry, kids. Real ID is the thing. Real ID will save us from all the scammers. Now, Real ID is just about making it more difficult for you to move around, I think. But I would just kind of leave that alone. But we'll keep you up on that if it ends up getting its class action status. Another big story, and I don't know if this is something where it's just sort of a fait accompli or not, but the Public Utilities Commission is seeking your comment on Pacific Power's proposed rate increase. This is a big deal. This is a huge deal. PUC having a Zoom meeting tonight for you to comment on Pacific Power's general rate case. Now, I'm going to be at this, this next 224-225-226 meeting tonight, so I'm not going to be on the Zoom meeting, but I think we're going to have to work up some public commenting because public comment will be open here for a while on this. Essentially, Pacific Power wants to raise, they already raised your power bill big time at the start of the year, and now they want to put another 22% on top of that, 21.6% to be exact. And they wanted this to go into effect next year. 21.6%. And they said the average person would be paying about $30 more a month. You're probably already paying another $25-$30 more a month now than you were a year ago. And I ended up just looking at my Pacific Power bills over the last year or so, added up my kilowatt hours, and then figured what it was going to cost. 2-3 years ago, during the COVID time, I think my cost per kilowatt hour was about 12.5-13 cents a kilowatt hour by the time you added in all of Pacific Power's costs and things. And then last year, it was about 15 cents a kilowatt hour. And next year, if all of this goes through, we're going to be about 19 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, that's not going to be the kilowatt hour cost quoted to you. They'll say, well, it's really about 16 or 15 or whatever. No, you have to add in all the other fees that get added on there, too. So we'll be pretty close to 20 cents a kilowatt hour. That's just huge. These are huge increases. And I figured out that for me, my house is just a 1,900 square foot home, East Medford. It will cost me about $415 more a year. Now, see, isn't that great? Though Pacific Power talks about it, though, it'll be another $30 a month. And so $30 a month, you kind of go to sleep. And you're thinking, $30 a month. Yeah, that's going up $30 a month. And then your car insurance is going up $30 a month. And your health insurance is going up $500 a month. And then your home insurance is going up to $100 a month. Well, this is that inflation sort of issue. But, I know that Pacific Power is going to try to make the case that this is all about wildfires. But really what it is about the decarbonization, too. That is a big part of it. And this is what I would love to get a hold of someone on the PUC and Pacific Power that'd be willing to talk about it. I'm trying my best to get Pacific Power people on, but they don't like talking about the collapse of reliable power and replacing it with chaotic and intermittent power. They really don't. This is a big, big deal. Even though the Zoom meeting is tonight, and we're going to be talking about the charter changes tonight, so I'm not going to be on the Zoom. I'll get the information together, and I think we need to start getting some comments, some public comments in here. Big, big time. What we're starting to experience here in Oregon, and I'm sorry to be a Debbie Doomer on this power issue here, but if you go to stopthesethings.com, which is an anti-windmill, and it's an anti-gangrene site, stopthesethings.com, they really hate wind because of the inefficiency of it, actually. The one thing they're finding out when you survey it, though, countries with the most wind and solar generation suffer the world's highest power prices. This is a fact. And yet, what have they been telling us all this time, even through Pacific Power's propaganda? Ooh, wind and solar, it's so cheap, it's practically free. As they charge you more for Blue Sky, right? Do you ever wonder how the liberals in Jacksonville and Ashland that would actually fall for that scam? Did they even think about this? It's so cheap, you have to pay more per month for it. All right, that sort of thing. But Stop These Things has a great article analysis on this this kind of trend today. China enjoys the world's lowest power prices because of cheap, abundant, reliable coal-fired power. Adding to their advantage, China is building dozens of new coal-fired and nuclear-powered plants. It's almost as if they know something about the economic benefits of having affordable and reliable power around the clock. And that is the emphasis to place on this. The team from Joe Nova laid out some hard truths in this article. Obviously unpalatable truths for the wind and sun cult, but truth just the same. The more wind and solar generation you have, the higher your power prices are, especially when they're going to do, like Pacific Power is phasing in here now, time of use. You try to actually use that amazingly abundant free wind and solar when you actually need it, like, oh, I don't know, 4 till 9 in the day, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., when you want to keep your house cold in the summer or keep your house warm in the winter and also cook dinner and do dishes and things like that, and you're going to pay for it and pay for it dearly. Keep it in mind, all right? We'll talk more about that in the next day. The power thing is certainly a big deal. They're going to be looking for comments, and we need to blister them, okay? 25 after 6, KMED, KCMD.
The burgers are so tasty, people have been known to pass out from the sheer ecstasy of biting into one. Experience them at Diner 62.
Mark your calendars for the 42nd Annual Southern Oregon Home Show, brought to you by the Builders Association Southern Oregon. The one place once a year with anything and everything for your home and property. It's May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Jackson County Expo. This event is your one-stop shop to save money on everything you need for your home and property. Almost 200 exhibitors, Southern Oregon's finest contractors, anything that you need you'll find, with expert advice and solutions for your next project. Have a fun-filled weekend with live music, a beer garden, and the involvement of local nonprofits. It's an event for the whole family. Don't miss out on this opportunity to save money and have a blast. Visit buildso.com for more information or call 541-773-2872. See you at the Southern Oregon Home Show. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Brought to you by the Builders Association Southern Oregon, the self-funding nonprofit that provides education, advocacy, and policy support to the building industry in our community.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your one-stop accessory and protection shop, offering quality products like Lydex spray-on bedliners, undercoating, and truck, Jeep, and SUV accessories. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is now your premier source for overlanding, off-road, and outdoor lifestyle products. So what are you waiting for? Stop on by and get prepared for your next adventure. They're located at 4840 Airway Drive, just off Vilas Road in Central Point. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority. Your department of adventure.
American Wrencher Garage is your premier auto care provider, serving Medford, Central Point, and the Rogue Valley, providing nothing less than the highest quality standard of professionalism on every single service and repair. Call today. Appointments are available for oil change to engine change. Get the peace of mind you deserve at American Wrencher Garage on Biddle, across from Elmer's. 499-6673. 499-6673. American Wrencher Garage. We stand behind every job we do, with service you can trust.
Hi, Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
27 after 6, appreciate you being here. A lot of people showing up at yesterday's No on 15224, 225, and 226 event. That was in Eagle Point, city of Eagle Point, and it was standing room only. We ran out of chairs. And tonight there is going to be another one in which we talk about why this is the just the dumbest thing, the most irritating, intrusive thing that that we could let the Democrats do to Jackson County, just as bad, actually just as bad as 17116 in Josephine County, which I have a feeling that the people in Joe County will vote that down, praying that they'll come to their senses and get the voter turnout to do that. Mr. X was there. Hey, Ed, good to have you back. How you doing, sir?
Good, Bill. Very good. Other than having the weight of this in the future, looking at the possibility of this intrusion manifesting itself.
Yeah, you have 11,000 Democrats here in Jackson County that end up signing three petitions that are trying to do everything possible to fool the rubes, as they would think of us, and get us to invite this communist poison into our governmental system. What are you saying?
Well, you know, you just described it perfectly, Bill. And I look at it, how to say, in a way of, it just angers me, okay? Mm-hmm. It angers me to a point where the lies that they have pushed forward in doing this to make it seem like, oh, this is just so benign and this is Jackson County for all. Well, it's not Jackson County for all. And, you know, I take these things apart and I look at it and I think it through and I look at realities. And you just said it a few moments ago. They submitted basically 11,500 signatures. And I think from what I checked on, 200 of the signatures were thrown out. So let's look at that figure and keep it at 11,500 even. It doesn't matter. But they say in their website, oh, they submitted 36,000 signatures. Well, no, they didn't. They submitted 11,500 three times.
Okay. Yeah, for three different measures, and that's just it. And the concept that there's this just overreaching demand for what they're calling for. And you see, and I talked about this a bit yesterday. There was a younger man who came up there that was questioning why. In fact, I wanted to focus on this because I only have a couple of minutes before news here, Ed. And I wanted to make sure and hit this and make sure and hit this hard. There's a young man who came up on the stage. I don't know who he was. He had a wife and kids. Good guy. But he was asking why there is such a problem with districts. Now, districts are not on this on these three measures forming districts. But the Democrats involved with this have made it clear that we get this and they're coming back for districts. And it's just like, yep, they're trying to get us to take a little bit of the poison, go for five county commissioners in a county which is already being run extremely well and professionally, and get five commissioners and then put us into districts. And he was just wondering why this was such a big deal. What would you say to that young man if you had had the chance? I explained it some, but maybe you could have done it better.
Well, the question could have been clarified more by returning a question to him. And that's my point of the whole thing. Just asking him why he would believe or even accept that the move to districts would be good. Where did he come up with a concept? And normally, it's from the constant barrage of these people putting this out there like it's something good. And I look at this in our county charter, you know, basically, Jackson County was formed in 1853, I think it is. And this goes back to, like, her website things, what she's right. But Jackson County was cut in half in 1856, and Josephine County was created. So now we've had six commissioners for the original Jackson County since that point. But the reality, to go to districts, now you have loading the districts. This is what they do in all political areas. The districts, they change the district. They do this to the district. But what I want you to envision, anybody who's thinking about this, the districts are created to empower certain parts of the political mechanism. And when you look at the idea of having Ashland as a district, the South County as a district, well, what do you want to do? You want to give them more power to burn all year long or all through fire season? This is what they're after.
And that's the way to look at this. Another way to look at the districts here is about dividing and conquering. As it is right now, every county commissioner in Jackson and Josephine County is voted on by the entire voting populace here, one way or the other. I mean, they, you know, you have the opportunity to do this, okay? Now, yeah, but the point of districts, though, is to divvy us up and divide it all up there. And so that way you no longer have county, you have no longer have county commissioners that care about the entire county. You have district commissioners that happen to be in the county is what you have.
That's exactly right. And you don't really have commissioners as it was envisioned in the original founding of everything, okay? Mm-hmm. You have clerks. You have people that are agreed to go along to get along. And they remove the power of the county. And people don't understand one of the mechanisms in our system of government in the United States was a strong county commission.
And everything about districts weakens county government. And that's the takeaway here. I just want to hit the highest point that is the most teachable moment here, Ed, before we take off. And we can talk about this a little bit later, since it is Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. And you got a boulder on this, okay? I get it.
Believe me.
I get
believe me.
All you have to do to see the evil of districts in action is what happened in Siskiyou County, because in the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors, they have Board of Supervisors, that's what they call it instead of the County Commission. When you had the environmental destruction and garbage being blown out of the Klamath Dam removal there, you had one district mostly affected by this, where this was going. They wanted to do a state of emergency because of what was happening in this one district. But the other district commissioners, because remember, they're no longer county commissioners, they're district commissioners in a county, really, which is what they want. And the other ones did not see the problem or didn't want to get... didn't want to make that big of a deal about the Klamath Dam environmental destruction on that. I mean, if you had if you had those county commissioners all caring about the entire county, they probably would have been a stronger resistance to this push to destroy their ecosystem there in Siskiyou County.
Well, the reality, Bill, the only thing in our charter that was ever wrong is the concept that was put in when the charter went out for approval for home rule back in the 70s.
Yep.
And that was the agency of the state preceding the body politic. And that was where the original falsehood was put into play.
And that was put in back in the 1970s in a lot of our smaller counties, most of our smaller counties, in order to make us be laydowns for state land use planning. This was all part of the push.
That's right.
All right?
For SB 100. So
yeah.
When you look at the reality, our charter was never in question, never has been in question. And, you know, this is the point that I look at. There's manufactured arguments that they come up with over rationales. Well, they can't get a Democrat elected. Well, fine. That means that you're not satisfying. You know, statistically, you look at this, and what I was going to go to before, 11,500 people. Well, on her own website, she says there's 250,000 people in Jackson County. Well, 250,000 people is 250,000.
Yeah. So you have 11,000 malcontents trying to destroy what the majority has decided they weren't looking for in the first place. We'll talk more about that a little later, Ed. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again, Mr. X, community organizer and researcher in the truest sense, not the Obama sense. Okay. All right, Dr. Jane Orient, MD. What is going on? Excess deaths, are they still hanging on post-COVID? We got so used to hearing died suddenly. Is that still going on? We'll talk with her about that here in seconds.
Legislators are too often swayed by peer pressure to vote yes on bad bills. Lobbyists know this, so they contribute to campaigns that give them influence with the politicians.
Lobbyists know that I will vote independently and entirely from principle, so they won't support my campaign. Special interest money won't buy my vote. My campaign is supported by individuals.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Republican Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerno with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Monday, a man was sentenced to life in prison after being found guilty of sexually abusing a little girl in a Grants Pass YMCA pool. Monday afternoon, 68-year-old Rex McCurdy faced Judge Brandon Thusen after being found guilty by a jury for two counts of sex abuse. Amanda McGeorge of the District Attorney's Office told Judge Thusen McCurdy has previous convictions in California in sex crime-related charges. McCurdy has a criminal history of over 30 years with both sexual and non-sexual crimes to people of all ages. Then, Josephine County Commissioner candidates will be participating in a forum tonight in Grants Pass. The forum is from 6 to 9 at Grants Pass City Hall in the Council Chambers. It's being hosted by the Grants Pass and Josephine County Chamber of Commerce and the Daily Courier. A live stream link can be found on the Chamber's website at grantspasschamber.org/events. Then the deadline to register to vote in Oregon is today. Ballots will be mailed out in May, and you can head to the Secretary of State's website to register to vote, change your voting address, or party affiliation. You can also register in person at your county elections office. For local news anytime, head on over to our website, KOBI5.com. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Serna.
The People's Commissioner. Hi, this is Ron Smith, candidate for Josephine County Commissioner. So why do I say the People's Commissioner? Here's five good reasons. One, I've worked on the people's side of government over 20 years, defending our property rights, our liberties, and our freedoms from government overreach and intrusion. Two, because when you elect me, you'll get a man of integrity who will honestly listen and hear your concerns. I will never forget I work for and serve the people. Three, I'm a team player on the people's team. I'm not a politician. I'm just like you, believing in lower taxes, financial responsible, and transparent government. Four, I have no hidden agendas. I will openly work to see the people's will expressed through county government to be your voice inside government. Five, as a conservative, I am done letting politicians waste our tax dollars on nonsense while we're robbed by drifters, choked by smoke, and gouged by outrageous housing costs. Learn more at VoteRonSmith.com. Paid for by citizens to elect Ron Smith commissioner.
Hi, it's Jason at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Through April, purchase a set of four Cooper tires for practically whatever you drive, and you'll get a Visa reward card in the mail. Get $100 on top of the line Cooper Discover STT Pro Mud Terrains or Cobra Instincts for your sports car. Get $75 on five styles of all-terrain truck tires, including the popular AT3 XLT, and get $50 on three styles of all-season passenger tires, including Endeavor. Save on Cooper tires at Phoenix Auto Center. Center Tire Pros.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
Been way too long since I've had the privilege and pleasure of talking with Dr. Jane Orient, MD. She's the executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. In other words, a group of American physicians and surgeons that is actually looking out for the patient and American freedom rather than the latest grift from pharmaceuticals or, I don't know, BlackRock, maybe taking over your practice. I don't know. I probably shouldn't start the interview off like that with Dr. Orient. But Dr. Orient, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you, Bill. It's always great to talk to you.
You ended up putting out an op-ed piece the other day that I found quite thought-provoking over the weekend. And the question you were asking about COVID-19 vaccines, vaccination, is the death rate higher after vaccination? And normally, when you think about what happens after a vaccine, and I know people are thinking, well, gosh, you know, COVID is 4 years ago, right? We're over, we're past that. But I wanted to focus in on the fact that the medical system is still pushing the vaccinations, and the CDC is still pushing it and pushing it hard. Are they not? All these groups?
Oh, they are. And your doctor will probably recommend it. And the medical society websites are full of information about where you can get your shot.
All right.
And yet, there is still evidence accumulating that these shots may be responsible for the unquestionable decrease in life expectancy.
So there's no getting around that. It is not people are suffering the effects of COVID. This is strictly about the death rates post bringing in the vaccines.
Right. Remember that a vaccine, it's not like a drug. You take it when you're sick, and then your body gets rid of it, and you stop taking it if there's a bad effect. This is meant to make a permanent change in your body, in your immune system. So you're getting an injection. Once it's in, there's no getting it out. It goes to all the organs of your body. It hides out in your lymph nodes and your bone marrow, supposedly waiting for an opportunity to attack the virus if you get infected with it again. But it does a lot of other things also.
When you have a graph of deaths, the rate of deaths after vaccines and such, how does it normally behave in the middle of a pandemic when the vaccines are brought in and you start giving them to patients?
Well, with a safe vaccine like the pneumonia vaccine, if you look at the number of deaths after the vaccine is given from Medicare data, you should see a decreasing trend. Like if you start off with 100,000 people, there's a certain death rate per day, but you only die once, so the number of deaths should decline over time. But with the COVID vaccine, unlike other vaccines, the number of deaths keeps increasing. So by the end of the year, the excess deaths, according to one person's analysis, is 25% higher than baseline.
Is this
the explanation?
Is this possibly an explanation then, or at least a partial explanation? There are probably many things that would be affecting excess deaths overall, but would this be explaining a lot of the, it's just anecdotal though. Everyone's noticed how the term died suddenly has become higher and higher, and just you'll find it. People that would appear to be reasonably healthy just dying, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of curiosity about it. And I can't help but wonder if we're looking at this and it's a, kind of like a soft conspiracy, a very quiet conspiracy. What do you think about that?
Well, sudden deaths have always been around. We've known about them historically. Are they increased or not? We see too many stories about young, healthy, hardworking people just found dead or just or coming down with a particularly aggressive and unusual cancer at an unusually young age. So naturally, one is curious. What is the explanation? I think there's something of what I call negative evidence. That's evidence that ought to be there that isn't. Like you would think if there's a concern about this, all of the universities and the government should be doing careful studies to look into it and to find out what the cause is, or whether something that just happened about the same time we saw the increase around 2021, namely the COVID vaccines, might be responsible. But in all of these stories, one of the things that's missing is the vaccination history. Oh, the family needs to grieve, they need to have their privacy and so on. But everybody's very curious about what the cause was. Why is this one piece of information just prominently missing? And where are the studies? Where are the autopsies? Where are the questions being asked and answered? There are papers showing up here and there about, there's microplastics, or there's forever chemicals, or there was a solar eclipse, and maybe some of these things have to do with the rising death rate. And of course, there's fentanyl and all kinds of other things that it could be.
Yeah, and they certainly have, a part to play in what you're talking about. But overall, the studies that you were talking about, research by Steve Kirsch and others there are talking about, right now we're experiencing an overall 25% higher death rate overall, or excess deaths, in excess deaths, what the normal would normally be expecting since the rollout. And this is the specific part, not since COVID, since the rollout of the vaccines for COVID for a lot of the American population. Is that kind of where we're getting here?
Right. Maybe it's depression. Maybe it's more alcohol abuse.
Sure.
Thanks to the lockdowns. We don't really know what the cause is, but why do we not have a very intensive investigation about whether the vaccines could be responsible? Why is that piece of information missing? Why are we not seeing a flood of research papers saying, well, this is the question. We have found evidence for it. We have refuted the evidence that people claim to have found.
Is not the challenge that most of the research papers are funded by the federal government in many cases, at least in the United States of America, in which the Fauci types of the world hand out the funding? Isn't that part of the issue here, of the lack of evidence?
That's part of the issue. The other thing is that physicians are getting incentives for having a certain proportion of their patient population vaccinated. Moreover, there is a big negative incentive not to even mention possible downsides in the vaccine because of the threat of having your medical licensure or your board certification revoked.
Oh, okay. Now you see, that's a big one. That's a big one. I'm talking with Dr. Jane Orient, Orient MD, and once again, she's the executive director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You can find this information we're talking about, by the way, on their website, aapsonline.org. I think this comes down, you're talking about physicians losing their certification. So if they are not pushing the COVID vaccine, is it about a state certification, or is it about a federal certification of some sort?
Well, the Federation of State Medical Boards sent out a directive that we need to fight disinformation or misinformation promoted by doctors. And medical licenses and certifications should be considered as at risk if doctors are putting out misinformation and saying anything other than that the vaccines are safe and effective is considered misinformation. So while your doctor may not be pushing it, he may be very reluctant to speak out and ask the question in public.
Yeah.
Lest he lose his livelihood.
Yeah, I have a relative who is actually just having a litany of health problems, and his two physicians have told him unequivocally, and I don't know if these physicians are risking their licenses, but they told him, yeah, you have been damaged. You have been neurologically damaged by your vaccine intake over the last couple of years. And these are not alternative physicians. These are just standard MDs. What do they call them, allopathic physicians?
Allopathic, that's what they call us.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, just like you, just standard MD. And they're actually on the record as saying that he's actually damaged. And still, I think the medical system looks at this relative of mine as if he has two heads. And they're not really sure what to do because the rest of the system is still around there telling, hey, you know, you got to get your boosters and, you know, continue to do this. So the propaganda is still coming down from the CDC. And, you know, are we completely captured, I guess, regulatory captured by the vaccinate for COVID agenda?
I think this is really a big threat. And there are so many, many patients who have very serious, disabling, painful symptoms. Well, they were previously healthy, previously hardworking, and they will go to the doctors, and the doctors will say, oh, it can't be the vaccine. I don't know what's wrong with you. Maybe you're depressed. Maybe you're anxious. And these patients get no medical help. They will not even have acknowledgments from their doctors that the vaccines might have been responsible.
Hmm. Yeah, everything but the vaccine will be looked at, but yet we don't know what's wrong with you. Boy, that's a heck of a diagnosis when you go into the doctor, isn't it?
Right. We're baffled. We don't know what's wrong with you, and maybe it's your fault, or the implication is that it's your fault. Anyway, I can't think of anything to do for you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what do you think could be done about this? Because you have another piece out here from AAPS about board certification abuses. And to me, this is kind of going back to what you were just talking about, where doctors are threatened with their certification if they don't go along with this. In other words, a difference of medical opinion is somehow misinformation. I don't recall doctors ever talking to one another that way. Do you?
Absolutely not. And I never recall a circumstance in which doctors couldn't even talk to each other publicly about what are you seeing? What are you doing about it? What are your results? It's just that they just cite what's in the drop-down menu or what's in the best practices that are stated by the public health department and then echoed by the medical society. There's no independent thought.
So what is this about the board certification abuses? Is there something we could do about this? And might this actually start a more truthful inquiry to why we have excess deaths post-COVID, and the pandemic is long gone? What do you think?
Well, we AAPS has filed a lawsuit against several of the boards, the Board of Internal Medicine and Family Medicine and OBGYN, along with the government, this disinformation, DGB, that supposedly was abolished but really was just transferred somewhere else, about the influence on free thought and the ability of doctors to honestly advise their patients.
And are you looking for people to help out with maybe information to help with this suit? Do you need funding to help do this? I mean, what's the story? I just want to make sure people get the whole story from you this morning since we're on.
Well, we do have the opportunity to make donations to the American Health Legal Foundation, which funds this litigation. We are awaiting a decision from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And we'll see how that transpires. But if you look at the amicus briefs in different cases filed by the AMA and the whole long, long list of medical organizations, it's all the same. Vaccines are safe and effective. They're the greatest public health benefit. We have to fight against vaccine hesitancy. Everybody needs to follow our advice. And they just completely ignore any safety signals that regulatory agencies should have been jumping all over. I mean, the Surgeon General of Florida, for example, Dr. Ladapo, has suggested these vaccines need to be taken off the market. Many other physicians have seconded that recommendation. Some European countries have restricted them at least to younger populations. But we just seem to be determined to defend these products and the whole long pipeline of similar products that are going to be promoted.
What do you think is driving this defense? You know, this defense of that narrative. What do you think is doing this?
Well, I think that the media, for example, is very highly dependent on pharmaceutical company advertising. So are medical journals. So are academic departments. So there is just so much influence from people who have billions or even trillions of dollars at stake that it is, and like the CDC is supposed to be scientific and objective, and yet the people who work there get royalties and they get consultancy fees from certain products. And so they really have a conflict of interest. There's this revolving door between the FDA and the CDC and big pharmaceutical companies.
Did we make a mistake, Dr. Jane Orient, MD, did we make a mistake when we permitted the advertising of pharmaceutical drugs back in the day? I don't know how long ago that was, but I recall, and I'm in the advertising industry, so I have a dog in this fight, though, but did we make a mistake overall when it comes to public health policy by doing this?
I think it's beginning to look like that because there's so many, many ads. But interestingly, almost all of them will have a long list of disclaimers spoken very, very quickly against the background of, you know, nice music and people frolicking in the park or something like that. But you don't see that same list of cautions with vaccines.
Boy, that's really interesting. Why don't we see that same kind of list of cautions that you would with, let's say, even Ozempic, which seems to be the weight loss drug du jour right now?
Well, that is a very good question that everybody should be asking. Why don't we have any cautions or any emphasis on the need for informed consent for products that are being forced on people? You know, you get the jab or you lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're in a very low risk group as far as getting a serious illness or death, if you do come down with the illness that the vaccine is supposed to prevent. But of course, it doesn't work very well, and it wears off, and that's why we have these constant boosters.
Yeah. You get the impression that the pharmaceutical company would like our immunity system to be available as a service? You know, I'm jokingly saying that, in which, it's kind of like the car companies want transportation as a service, so you don't buy the car, you just rent the car, you know, by the hour or whatever it is. Does the pharmaceutical company want us renting our immune system? So if we don't get the booster, we're not immune against anything? You think would they do that if they could, you think?
Well, that's a very serious charge, right?
I know.
I mean, that's really like a depopulation agenda. I mean, people have made that suggestion. Certainly, there's a trend that we have to rent everything, that we can't own anything. And it's becoming increasingly difficult in many areas to have control over your own decisions. Certainly, that we need to worry about that. And it's very, very important to keep alive the ability to think for yourself, to research for yourself, to speak out loud, and to be able to say no thanks when you're offered something.
Dr. Jane Orient, MD, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, aapsonline.org. Final question I have for you. What role has the way Medicare pays for medical care, how has that changed medical practices within the respect that it appears that hospitals are buying up all the private practices right now and that there are fewer and fewer independent doctors who might be resistant to this one-size-fits-all medicine? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Medicare certainly got all seniors dependent on it. It started off with the promise, we'll never interfere with medical care. All we're going to do is pay the bill. But they started violating that promise immediately, that if the doctor does something that's unnecessary or fails to do something that they want him to do, he could actually be accused of fraud and sent to prison. But certainly his payments will be at stake.
Mm-hmm.
So doctors are increasingly having their prescribing practices dictated by government bureaucracies.
Okay. Can that be remedied in any form at this point?
It's very difficult. I think more and more doctors need to take the opportunity to opt out, to go back to working for their patients instead of getting third-party payment for everything. Direct primary care is a good move in that direction. Mm-hmm. Or more and more doctors are going back to the old-fashioned fee-for-service thing where they don't sign up with UnitedHealthcare or all this myriad of managed care plans and working only for their patients. But patients think, oh, why should I have to pay for something the insurance is supposed to? Well, you know, if something is not paid for, it will not be available. And if only certain things are paid for, you may be forced to get those things and have no options.
Yeah. It's interesting how what influences insurance can have. Like I said, I have a close relative who the insurance company would not pay for a particular cancer treatment. They would pay for infusion, but they wouldn't pay for a Keytruda. This is the one that that came up, even though the person's tumor markers matched what Keytruda would do, you know, cancer immunotherapy. And we had an independent surgeon, a doctor that really went to the mat for this particular patient, ended up getting it for her. And I think it saved your life. But I guess if you were to just to let the insurance companies decide everything, well, I guess we're doomed, huh?
Doctors may spend a huge amount of their time fighting with insurance companies.
Yeah.
But patients have paid through huge insurance premiums, and they have nothing left over to pay for things that the insurance company doesn't cover. So the cost of medical care has just skyrocketed, and choices have diminished, and things are costing a whole lot more than they ought to.
Mm. So ultimately, we're really looking at the battle between the independent physician, you know, direct primary care, versus the insurance model in which essentially the insurance and national protocols dictate what get done. Is that the battle as it is set up right now in the United States?
Well, it's a battle between patients and third-party payers.
Between patients and third-party payers. Okay.
Well, the patients is affected by this. I mean, the doctors are affected for sure, but they're probably going to do all right. It's the patients whose lives are being sacrificed.
All right. Dr. Jane Orient, MD, we really appreciate your take on this, and I will post the information that you shared there about the excessive deaths, the rise of that post-vaccination, and these are just solid numbers, and you would think that there would be a bit more curiosity in the United States medical world about why did this happen? Because these were not COVID deaths, but they were obviously dead bang connected to what happened after.
Well, they are all-cause deaths.
All-cause deaths.
A very definite endpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. And sure, some of it may be fentanyl and various other things. We know that. But no one wants to look. And that's the scary part, that you have such an increase in all-cause deaths with no curiosity about the system that claims to care for you. Okay.
Well, and if you look at vaccines that are considered safe, like the pneumonia vaccine, you do not see this trend, only with the COVID vaccines.
Yeah. So you give someone the pneumonia, that rolled out, didn't cause any problems. Good. Glad to hear that, because I got that. All right. Just wanted to let you know. Dr. Jane Orient, MD, thank you so much. Executive Director of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, aapsonline.org. We will have you back. Thank you again.